Good morning. It's 7th of June. Our New Testament reading today brings us to James chapter 1. I'm going to read to you from Brother Neville Smart's book on the Epistle of James. Brother Smart considers the greeting contained in verses 2, 3 and 4 of the chapter. Count it all joy, my brethren, when ye fall into diverse trials. And writes these words about that concept. How is it possible to rejoice and to be exceeding glad, to count it all joy when we are reviled and persecuted? In answering this question, James is led to a succinct exposition of the divine purpose in the matter, which is relevant for the saint to trial of all kinds and in all ages. It is easy for those who have only tasted lightly the ills that flesh is heir to speak in ideal terms of the nature of trial, to see it as a distant conception surrounded with a kind of romantic aura. The man who has really suffered has no time for such unreal attitudes. He knows, as a matter of bitter experience, what the theorist and the philosopher seem too often unaware of, that no joy but only grief and pain can be found in trial itself. They are a part of the very meaning of the word. And the scriptures are never unrealistic. They never suggest that trial is to be rejoiced in, or even can be rejoiced in, for its own sake. In fact, they frankly recognise that the opposite is the case. When James adds to his exhortation, "Count it all joy," the qualification "knowing this," he clearly implies that the joy of the believers is to be taken not in the diverse trials themselves, but in some knowledge associated with their experience of the trials, which points to a significance and purpose underlying them. One of the passages in which Peter's first epistle shows a most marked resemblance to James' letter is that in which the apostle refers to the persecutions that were beginning to come upon the readers from the Gentile world about them. He too exhorts them to greatly rejoice, but not in the persecution itself. For this, as he recognises, they are quite naturally in heaviness. And here we should look at 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 to 9. And when the writer to the Hebrews speaks of trial in its aspect of chastening, he confesses freely that no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. In itself, then, trial is not a subject of rejoicing. And indeed, if our trials are not in some measure a source of heaviness and grief to us, then they are no trials at all. But for the true believer, for the man who has wholly committed his way to the Lord, there is a significance in the trials that are permitted to come his way, which lies beyond the actual experience itself. It is in proportion as he is conscious of this significance that his heaviness becomes mingled with, and in some cases completely lost in and transcended by, his joy. Trial, whether it take the form of persecution or reproach for the name of Christ, or whether it come upon us as one of the commoner ills of humanity, is a forceful reminder of real values, an effective means of detaching the soul from earth, disciplining it and conforming it to Christ. Through trial, true faith is separated from its false accompaniments. Its essential fibre is toughened, so that it takes on the enduring quality of that seasoned timber which never gives. It was after faithful Abraham had patiently endured that he obtained the promise, and it is through faith and patience that we ourselves inherit the promises. "He that endureth to the end shall be saved," says James. So let us endure and make our salvation sure in the Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you for listening.